It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. So glad you're here. Today, we have a special guest. She is the director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com, founder of ashwealth.com, and author of a book called Money for Tomorrow, which I think we're going to be talking a little bit about, How to Build and Protect Generational Wealth, published by the guys over there at Bigger Pockets. She's also the co-author of the international number one bestseller, Resilient Women in Life and Business, and host of another podcast called The Passive Investing Made Simple Show. It's also on YouTube. And she's a partner and she's got a ton of money, like millions and millions of dollars in real estate, 6,500 plus residential units, 15 car washes, and on and on. She's got some bona fides to be able to talk to us today about some great stuff. Let's welcome Whitney Elkins Hutton. Whitney, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me back on the show, Mark.
So good to see you. Now, you do a lot of stuff when it comes to investing, and we have a breadth of people here at the Wealth Architect Podcast. We have seven and eight figure investors. We have people that are just getting started and getting their feet on the ground and trying to learn maybe some alternate things than they would hear from Wall Street. What is it that you are seeing out there on your side? And maybe you can start it off with a little bit of background about your education, your process to be able to be able to talk about it as an author and somebody that's in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm currently today director of investor education at passiveinvesting.com. As you mentioned, founder of Ash Wealth, a wealth creation company. But I didn't go to school for those things. I didn't go to school for real estate. I actually started off in public health school. And so, you know, back up my real estate career, you know, back to 2002, when I bought a house with a significant other, and, you know, about a month later, the relationship fell apart, and I had a house, I thought it was going to sink me. So I panicked. I stepped in full of roommates. We completed the rehab, got it sold, and paid my friends in sushi, beer, and pizza in order to, you know, rip up the green shag carpet, redo the floors, get the psychedelic daisies like off the walls and stuff like that. Truly 1960s product. And mind you, this is before YouTube. So I had to learn everything from a book by reading a book and by going to Home Depot classes. And so just a little bit of elbow grease, and then turned a profit on that first property. And that's really where my investing journey began, because that first property taught me that my value that I create in the world is unhooked from how much time I spent at a job. And so, because I made more money in that one transaction than I did in my day job that I loved, honestly, I loved. I was working on a CDC bioterrorism grant, training doctors and nurses how to administer, you know, smallpox vaccinations, identify anthrax, all sort of like biological, chemical, radiological exposure events. You know, this is post 9/11, right? I absolutely was, you know, loved my job, but I was like, wait a second, you know, which is going to get me to financial freedom? And I didn't even have that vocabulary.
Most people don't.
I was just like, which one is going to get me to like be able to retire sooner? Like, I want what that guy over there is doing, that, you know? There's a huge evolution in the various ways I've invested. I document all of that whole journey in Money for Tomorrow, and really about not just so much the journey, but the lessons that I learned along the way, because what I was searching for was that blueprint on how to create wealth for myself. And then eventually when I got married and had kids, I wanted to be able to pass that on in such a way that the next generation could steward that wealth. And so this is a compilation of, you know, my fix and flip journey, my single family rentals, we scaled 36 there, my small multifamily journey, you know, capital raising, being a general partner on multifamily projects, and then now, you know, being primarily a limited partner investor. You know, each of those phases, you know, there's different rules to the wealth game that I had to master, and different strategies that supported me winning at each one of those rules that I had to master, that was independent of any tactic that I invested in. And that's the cool thing. And so really this book is meant to kind of pull all that together Of course, I love real estate. I love investing in businesses, but you know, these principles apply to people that are, you know, still investing in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, even.
Wow. Well, you know what? That I hate to start off the interview with this, but why don't you argue with me about this concept that I have? Because you've got
What
a
happens
breadth.
if I agree with you, Mark? Just kidding. Okay.
Well, we're going to find out. So normally what I tell people is, I don't believe in diversification. I believe you diversify among asset classes and you concentrate within them. So if you're going to invest in real estate, I don't think you should be in vacant land, in strip malls, in storage, in commercial office buildings. I think you should pick one and be really, really good on it. And you have picked many, and it seems like you're really, really good on it. Now, let's have a debate about whether, if you look back, you would have been better to just stick with multifamily or car washes or whatever, or if spreading yourself around and learning about different things suits your personality, or if that's the way to that you would recommend other people have success. What do you think?
So I actually agree with you, Mark, because
Yeah.
my specialty is in residential real estate. I don't get into the operational side of self-storages or the operational side of express car washes. I understand, again, the principles of why those strategies work, those tactics works, I should say, at a very high level. But I seek out the best operator and I partner with those operators, or I go get another partner who specializes in that particular investment area. So me, myself, what I concentrate on a day-to-day basis, and I actually would say that I'm a little spread thin, but I have two businesses that I run primarily, and then I run all my residential real estate. That's it. I partner with the best of the best in the self-storage space, in the express car wash
Got
space,
it.
in the debt space. Now, I didn't start off that way. I had to learn that lesson the hard way because, and this is something that I talk to investors about all the time. Because when people start off, we're trained to invest in stocks, bonds, and mutual fund, you know, the traditional American narrative, you know, and we're trained to look at yield. And when we're trained to look at yield, it's irrelevant of who that business is, who the operator is, or even who the fund manager is. And when we decide, okay, we want to start moving out of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, start getting into real estate, either as us just going buying our first rental or even scaling up into larger multifamily projects or investing passively, we are still looking at the yield. Now, that works if we're the operator. It does not work when we start investing in other people's projects.
Now, why not?
I, as you know, if you, I'm saying, hey, Mark, let's partner together on the self-storage building, I can put whatever I want on that piece of paper. Okay. Now, hopefully, I'm a reputable person that you know, love, and trust. And I'm going to, you know, do my best guess. But you aren't taking a bet on the property. You're taking the bet on me as an operator to be able to steward that investment and make the right decisions to not only, you know, you complete the business plan, but also if we're partners to take care of not only like the money that I've put in, but the money that you have put in as well.
Wow. So, okay. So we agree. You wouldn't take the bait on that one, Whitney. Shoot. I didn't want to have to go here, but we could have a debate on Bitcoin. No, I'm not going to do that with you. But I would like to hear a bit about your book, and some of the lessons that we can learn just from your experience and the things that you've learned along the way. What are maybe 3 to 5 lessons that we can learn so that we can walk away from this podcast feeling educated by Whitney?
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark, I want to just expand just a little bit, you know, because I thought you were going to like change your mind and challenge me a little bit more, which you always do. But the reason why we should always, before I answer like the about the book, the reason why we need to you know, think shift that mindset is because now within real estate, I can diversify, but I'm not you know, diversifying my time and attention. I'm staying incredibly focused and I'm tapping into those knowledge and expertise of other people who are hopefully staying very focused on their areas of expertise. And that's how the wealthy 1% build is that they surround themselves, you know, Jim Rohn's principle, right? You surround yourself by the people that, you know, are going to get you to the next level. Now, as far as principles, we actually, you know, that I talk about in the book, one of the things that we talk about is the, you know, that wealth is a game. in that you have to understand the objective, which is to, you know, if you're going to have generational wealth, you know, to have enough passive income coming in to do what you want, when you want, with whom you want.
Yep.
To win generational wealth, you have to be able to teach the next generation to steward that wealth. Okay. Meaning that they're not, you know, they're not just riding off your coattails, that they actually can take what you built and build upon it. And they know how it was built. Okay. So how do you build it? Well, you have to be able to create wealth, keep it, grow it, and pass it on. Now, as investors, we typically over-concentrate on building the skill set to create wealth, you know, either scaling our businesses or being, you know, very instrumental in our jobs and, growing our income so we can then invest, which is the growing the wealth pillar. The challenges for a lot of investors is keeping the wealth. And this is where a lot of the stories in the book are about me settling these five estates in my family and just seeing the erosion of money fly out of these various estates because, you know, maybe they didn't use debt properly. And so, you know, they were getting wealth eroded by interest rates, or they didn't, in the case of my father, didn't use insurance properly to outsource his liabilities. And he got disastrously ill at the end of his life. And so, you know, nearly bankrupted him. Maybe they are paying exorbitant fees. That happened to my mother, you know, $600,000 lost in her portfolio just to paying fees in her retirement account. I mean, these are, you know, you add all these things up, you know, $700,000 of losses within my family, you compound that at 7% for five, you know, for 30 years, that's $5.3 million lost to the next generation. And so I want people to understand that there are six primary ways that they need to, you know, make sure that they're fortifying their wealth. And so we talked about three, the using interest wisely, using insurance wisely, you know, reducing your retirement fees. But, you know, we talk about taxation quite a bit in the book. How can we eliminate our tax liability or significantly reduce it so we can create velocity with our money? We also talk about, you know, I don't know about you, Mark, but I plan on retiring on more than the, you know, standard deduction, which is $25,000 for a married couple, like whenever I hit retirement. I don't know about you. So I plan on, you know, retiring well into the six figures a year, which means now I'm triggering what we call provisional income more than likely. And so we need to understand that as well. What does that do to our additional streams of income that we might be relying on?
Well, that brings up an interesting question, and I'll interrupt you for that and we can go on. But, you know, you're planning on, you know, with inflation going up, right? You're planning on six figures, and that's great. How is that structured so that you don't get killed in taxes?
Well, so, okay, let's go back to the provisional income conversation. Now, I'm not an accountant, so this is where anybody that like resonates with what I just said, you need to be partnering with a tax strategist. Maybe it's your accountant, maybe it's your CPA, but if not, you know, find a tax strategist that if you're, you know, 5, 7, 10 years from retirement, you're positioning your income to avoid, you know, large taxation. Now, what avoids provisional income? Okay. Any distribution you take from your Roth IRA. Okay. Remember, you already paid the taxes. It's grown tax-free. So it comes out tax-free. That doesn't trigger provisional income. Any distribution you take from your traditional IRA accounts that falls below your standard deduction, right? You know, as a married couple, we're getting about $25,000, $26,000 a year, you know, zero tax. Okay. So that doesn't trigger provisional income, but any distribution above it does. Okay. Now, I'm going to hold on the third one because I know you and I both love this topic. But the real estate, I'm very heavy in real estate. It does trigger provisional income, but I get to use depreciation and other deductions and other methodologies in order to lower my tax liability. Okay. But there's a third thing in here that does not trigger provisional income, and that is using cash flow life insurance. Mm. Okay. So you can take loans out from a cash flow life insurance policy, and that does not trigger provisional income.
Right. Because everybody, when you borrow money, it's not a capital gain or loss. So you don't have to pay tax on that. So what wealthy people normally do is they structure distributions, we'll call them distributions in quotes, they structure income and money as loans. And like Whitney said, it's a, you know, a lot of cases it's loans against life insurance. We've had other guests on the podcast and the show that have talked about that. So we're getting familiar with that concept. So it's just, there's a few smart ways to do it, because if you make six figures, you're going to have to give five of those figures to the government. And we want to avoid paying the government as much as possible, right?
Absolutely.
Unless you think they're spending our money really wisely.
Ooh, I'm going to pause on that. My husband is a government employee, so I got to walk that line very carefully.
Got it. Well, maybe they are. So good. Okay, so we've got interest, we've got borrowing money, and then we've got ways to do tax strategies around it. Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. Now, I get this question that's just been burning me for the last 7 minutes as you've been talking. And that is, you know, there's a lot of wealthy people that have kids and not all of them turn out great. In other words, they say that it takes three generations to lose a fortune, right? The person that worked his butt off to make it, creates the fortune, understands all the concept of hard work and saving and investing and building an empire. Then the next person doesn't understand that. They saw the dad working hard, maybe even, or mom too, maybe even resent the parents for working because they didn't spend enough time at their soccer games. So they rebel and they go a different way and they blow money. They don't have any skills around money. What are some of the nuances between what happens to build a legacy and some of those families that don't have the fortune to be able to move that forward into a legacy situation like you recommend?
Well, and sometimes it happens even much faster. I mean, there's some well-known celebrities out there, and we yep. see them in sports entertainment all the time. People that have worked so hard, have yeah. come from nothing, have worked so hard to build their legacy, and then just never learned how to invest it wisely. So they mastered the rule number one, creating wealth. They didn't really master rule number three, which is growing it. They certainly lacked on rule number two and four, which is keeping it, right? And then being able to pass it on. Now, when we talk about certain strategies to pass it on, you know, especially to the next generation, you know, ideally our kids, or I mean, not ideally, maybe you don't have kids. Maybe you've got a different, you know, wealth, you know, strategy there. But we want to think beyond just the living or, you know, creating a will or a trust. Okay. That, cause that doesn't really cut it. I mean, even if you created a will and you broke out, like, you know, who gets what, you know, whenever you pass away, or a trust and you designate, you know, hey, you know, Junior only gets, you know, money at age 25, 30 and 35, if they meet certain parameters, that helps allocate funds and allocate assets, hopefully shields them from creditors and predators. But what it doesn't do is actually teach them those right. necessary skills. And so this is, you know, something, you know, what, you know, we do in our family is, you know, we wanted our daughter to be able to steward our portfolio. Now, the way we have it structured, eventually, like she will, if something happens to both my husband and I, she will get, you know, a significant portion in that portfolio. But it's also about the knowledge and the skills. Because if maybe at some point in time, I decided to go with the die with zero strategy, meaning I like, am just going to spend it all because I made it, that I can pass on those skills and that information to her. But I have to start training her now. And it's kind of like planting a tree. The best time to have planted a tree was 30 years ago. The next best time today. So if you have older kids, You know, this th these are all still things that you can do. But, you know, for us, we started off playing cash flow for kids with her whenever she was like about 3 years old. Now, my friends thought I was nuts. My family thought I was nuts. I'm like, if I can get her to master two words,
Cash flow.
asset, liability.
Ah,
Nope,
okay,
not even cash
nice.
flow, just asset and liability. I have won at age three. Now, I get razzed all the time. Every time I say that, tell this part of the story, I always get a nasty email from somebody. But, you know, for me, it kept me buying a lot of Barbies every time I took her to Target. We didn't have that conversation. We were able to have conversations around spending. We'd be like, you know, we want to be good stewards. Okay, we don't want to scrimp and save everything. You know, we want to be able to enjoy what we're bringing in. But, like, you know, if we're in, Target, do we need to have like, you know, every Barbie under the sun? No. Like, would one, you know, work? Fantastic. The next thing that we really, imparted with her, and this was like a couple years after that, around age five, six, we sat down and reread the book, Richest Man in Babylon with her.
Such a great book.
It's an amazing book. And the cool thing about that book, it comes from a story perspective, right? It's not, you know, your blueprint or your didactic manual. It's told through story. And I, even though it's kind of like old English, I mean, it was written back, what, in 1923, it my daughter like loved it. She like sat there and was like, what's gonna happen next? Like, where's this guy going? Like, she was so enamored. But it teaches like, you know, 10 wealth building principles in there. But now we started getting into the concept around creating income. And then what do you do with that income? You got to set aside a portion to save it, a portion to give away to contribute back, okay? And then a portion to spend. And we have to get those balances right. And it's not so much about, you know, the building, you know, getting to age 30 and then you start saving. It was just like, no, let's start flexing that muscle now.
Nice.
And so when we started our, you know, a couple of years later, our value economy within our household. Now, a lot of people, we didn't do, we have chores and it's kind of a blend of chores and allowance, but we call it a value economy. Now, when she gets that money, through, you know, creating value within the household, it's allocated to different buckets, saving, what she's going to give back. And she loves donating to the Humane Society. That's been her favorite thing, favorite way to give it back. And then
Cool.
also to spending. And so we're allowing her to spend that money. And sometimes we go shopping, we come back, and my husband looks at me and he's like, why do we have another shirt? I'm like, you know what? Eventually, and this happened a few months ago, she bought a Squishmallow pillow. She comes back. And then the next week she decided that she wanted something else. I'm like, do you have any money? And she was like, no. I was like, okay,
Good lesson.
good lesson. I'd rather her make m those mistakes now with like 10, 50, even $100 or $1,000. You know, my child does not have $1,000 readily in her bank account right now, but I'd rather make those smaller mistakes now than bigger mistakes later on. Our next conversation that we're having, and I keep trying to introduce some of these concepts earlier and see if it lands, and then sometimes I have to like put a pin in them and come back to them, is going to be credit. And so, how do we leverage credit wisely?
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting one. In fact, I just went and bought a new truck, and the guy says your credit is amazing, but you don't have any. I don't know. He called it like install. He says it's only installment credit, or you don't have. There's some kind of credit. I don't play the credit game. I don't have any
Oh,
debts.
installment loans? Yeah, you need
Yeah,
to.
he's like, you're not getting enough credit from that. You pay all your credit cards off, and you pay all your mortgages off, but those are all falling off your thing. Yeah, I mean, you don't have any debt. You need to get some debt. And I'm like, no, I don't. That's the game they try to play. But it's an important thing because it does give you access to capital to be able to do some things when you need to do them.
Well, and we wanted her to be able to, you know, really wrap her head around that. Buying on credit is not free money. Like, you have to have a plan to, again, be able to steward that correctly. Like, how are you going to generate an income off of it? Like, what's the strategy around it? Like, don't have credit to have credit. Like, have a credit, you know, take something out on loan because you have a strategy around it. Like,
Right.
so you know, we want her to be able to buy assets. Now, we're also getting into investing. And so she's already invested alongside me in three of my multifamily projects. And so that's been really interesting because we take her out to those projects, you know, every time we drive by them, and, you know, she gets to see how they're changing and stuff like that. She's also been very integral, and we have a couple of short-term rentals, and we also have a camper van rental business. Now, that the camper van rental business is probably where she creates the most value. She's doing a ton of cleaning and, you know, organization, you know, restocking, supplying, and, you know, it's funny. It's not child labor. It is, but she enjoys it. She actually enjoys it. She gets to see how happy these people are when they're, you know, how joyful they are to get a nice clean product. And then whenever they bring it back, you know, she gets to hear about the trips and the excursions that, you know, they went on. And oftentimes she's been there, so she's able to have a conversation with them. So she's learning a lot of different business skills at the same time.
I love it. I think it's, I gosh, if everybody just did that. By the way, nobody that's listening is allowed to send you a nasty email about this, because this is what you're supposed to do with your kids, because our schools don't do it and most of our parents don't do it because we don't know, right? We haven't been taught. And people like Whitney are out there educating. We can't be sending her nasty letters, right? We want these books to keep coming out. We want her to
Oh.
be appearing on podcasts, right? So
Well, but the nasty letter is usually around like, why don't you buy your daughter the Barbies
right. That's what I
driving
mean.
her toys? I'm like, guys, if you saw the other room, the sunroom, she is not deprived of toys. Grandma ensures that she's not deprived of toys.
I love it. All right, let's wrap up. Where can people find your book? We're going to have everything in the show notes anyway, but where can people find your book and find a little bit more about you and how to get involved with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can find the book at biggerpockets.com/moneyfortomorrow. You can
Money for
also,
tomorrow, forward slash, good.
yep. And you, when you buy on BiggerPockets, you get some additional resources that come along with the book. Also, you can get it on Amazon.com as well. So it's there, you know, for people that love to listen on Kindle and stuff like that. As far as, you know, reaching out to me directly, you know, if you're needing support around the book, if you want to, you know, have more one-on-one conversations around like how to implement some of these principles, you can reach out to me at ashwealth.com, ashwealth.com. And if you're interested in how, you know, how to leverage passive investing to scale up your portfolio, like in multifamily, self-storage, express car washes, or debt, you can reach out to me at passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com.
I'm not letting you off the hook. You got to tell us how to listen to your podcast too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, when you go to passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com, you will get automatically enrolled to get access to the Passive Investing Made Simple Masterclass. And then you'll get some additional resources to help you go into your first or next passive investment with confidence.
Cool. Whitney Elkins Hutton, thank you so much for being here. Great to see you again, friend of the show. And love to see your smiling face and congratulations on the new book. I know it's going to make a world of difference in the world of people trying to get ahead. So thanks again for being on the Wealth Architect podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
And everybody else that's listening and watching, thanks for being here. And remember what I always say, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.